Dear friends, look around now. Choose the nearest exit to your seat. And in case of disturbance of any kind, to avoid the dangers of panic, walk. Do not run to that exit. And now, we ask you all to shift on your sanitary pedestals and join us in that great old hymn, By Order of P.D. Came unto them Philip called Punter, and he was Lillian Roth in his extremity. Merrily, merrily, he says unto them, saying, Merrily, merrily, for I am come. And he came, unto the house of his mother's brother's servant, saying, Where am I? And there was none there to answer him, not even no one, saying, Nowhere, yea, but in the land of reversible cups and sanitary pedestals. And he lay in that land a long time, like worms out of a hot cheese log.
Christians during medieval times thought that on Christmas Eve the Christ child wandered through the town searching for those who believed in him. So on that night they put candles in their windows to guide him through the darkness to their homes. It also was a custom to welcome strangers who were attracted like moths by the candles.
Well,
as a properly religious opening for this properly religious program.
I think so. Dr. Benjamin?
Yes, the
perhaps you would explain.
The reading for the day is from the book of Punter, chapter 4, verse 17. All we have to fear is me.
Yes.
Now, we'll be speaking on this message throughout the program today so that you at home may gain the insights of the many different attitudes toward this work that we are engaged in.
And what great work that is.
Yea, yea, it is great work indeed.
Selling candles. Don't forget to tell them about the candle.
There were six outside my window last night, piled up against the window, smashed. We stacked them up in the foyer, and then my wife will have them for dinner tonight. By golly, selling these candles has been the best thing that ever happened to me. Signed, Robert Gomez, Toledo, Texas.
I'm so worried about what's happening today in the Middle East, you know. And I'm so worried about the baggage retrieval system they've got at Heathrow. I'm so worried about the fashions today. I don't think they're good for your feet. And I'm so worried about the shows on TV that sometimes they want to repeat. I'm so worried about what's happening today, you know. And I'm worried about the baggage retrieval system they've got at Heathrow. I'm so worried about my hair falling out and the state of the world today. And I'm so worried about being so full of doubt about everything anyway. I'm so worried about modern technology. I'm so worried about all the things that they dump in the sea. I'm so worried about it, worried about it, worried, worried, worried. I'm so worried about everything that can go wrong. I'm so worried about whether people like this song. I'm so worried about this very next verse. It isn't the best that I've got. And I'm so worried about whether I should go on or whether I should just stop. I'm worried about whether I ought to have stopped. And I'm worried because it's the sort of thing I ought to know. And I'm so worried about the baggage retrieval system they've got at Heathrow. I'm so worried about whether I should have stopped then. I'm so worried that I'm driving everyone round the bend. I'm worried about the baggage retrieval system they've got at Heathrow.
Throughout the Middle Ages, the use of liquor was universal, and drunkenness was so common, it was unnoticed. They called it the Middle Ages because no one was able to walk home unless they were between two other fellows. I was the middle guy. Now, before I go any further, please do not labor under the misconception that I always have been a teetotaler. In my younger days, I was prone to take a nip. I chortle now at that former weakness in my otherwise strong character. But how well I remember my first encounter with the devil's brew. I happened to stumble across a case of bourbon and went right on stumbling for several days thereafter. Of course, now I touch nothing stronger than buttermilk. 90 proof buttermilk. I look on my days of revelry with scorn and reproachment and shudder. When I recall going to the corner saloon, tugging at my daddy's coattails and saying, "Father, dear father, come home with me now and bring a jug with you." However, I came from a very illustrious family. My great-grandfather was a friend of Benjamin Franklin. In fact, my great-grandfather would have discovered electricity, but he was too poor to buy a kite. He had to go out and hire one. I got a picture of him at home, standing in front of the town tavern. He was hiring a kite. Much higher. Now, many of you in the audience are giggling and scoffing and saying that I have given up strong drink only because the stuff is so hard to get nowadays. But you are in error. My basement is loaded. As I am. A pickpocket I once converted told me they have a school in Chicago Hill, short for Illinois. A pocket picking school. And the beginning rule they teach is no stimulants. They have to keep their heads clear and their fingers nimble. Why, friends, you set a bucket of beer in front of a pig and he'll grunt and walk away. And so should you. Or would you rather be a duck? Rummy days, I would tremble and shake for hours upon arising. It was the only exercise I got. Now, don't say you can't swear off drinking. It's easy. I've done it 1,000 times. In closing, I would like to offer my own favorite recipe to take the place of intoxicants. It's a real thirst quencher. It's called the raspberry freeze. Known in England as the raspberry freeze. Take 1 cup of pineapple juice, 2 cups of raspberry juice, 1 if you're in Europe, 1 cup of black tea, 3 cups of water, 2 egg whites. Freeze until half stiff. Well, when you're half stiff, everything is all right. I thank you.
Well, now that it's the year 6, what do you think?
The year 6?
6.
This is 19...
For you. For us, it's 6.
6? Yeah. Well, wait a minute. What happened before 6?
Nothing was happening. That's the reason we started counting 6 years ago. That's when Murph came on the scene.
Murph?
He's the divine god of our country.
What country is that?
Deluxe.
Where was he born?
In a warm canal. He was in a green egg. See, in our country, it never rained. It
never rained,
until 6 years ago.
I see.
Hailed, even. And this green egg fell onto the desert.
And that was Murph.
Well, not yet, until he hatched. Yeah. He'd come out of there, you should make Captain Marvel look like a weakling. All the wise men was bringing him presents.
All these wise men came along and bring him presents, huh?
Yeah, they brought him all that stuff. Frankenstein and Murph.
Frankenstein and Murph.
Yeah, he said, somebody there said, be a hell of a name for the kid.
For the kid, yeah.
So they called him Murph.
They called him Murph. And he's your god.
You better believe it. Well, by the way, it's only 19 shopping days till Murphmas. You'd like him.
I'd like Murph, huh?
Oh, man, he's got a way with the ladies. He don't stink. He never tells no dirty jokes.
Well, tell me more about this Murph. Now, what do you worship, for instance?
We're so religious until you get a headache.
Is that right?
Yeah, you know, we worship aluminum. You know, we kill there for aluminum.
Aluminum is a big number.
Oh,
huh?
Every year we have our pilgrimage to Pittsburgh.
You go to Pittsburgh?
Yeah, when they smelt it, the Reynolds Aluminum Company.
Yeah?
When the smoke is really pouring out, we all drop down to our knees and pray for peace.
Is that right?
Hey,
you got any aluminum on you?
Do you smoke?
No.
Won't be long till Murph, miss. We'll sit down to a big Murph, miss dinner. Yeah, well, you know, I've roasted Shetland ponies.
That's Shetland ponies.
No, these are really small.
They're punies.
Yeah, you put them under glass. One time I had 7 of them. I said, come on, let's have some to eat. I didn't say that when Murph was around.
Oh, no.
You can't say eat in front of him.
Now, wait a minute. Do you do any dating back there?
Oh, Dad, tell me about it. You know, I had a lot of girls wanted to date me.
Yeah.
You know, they want to kiss me on the elbows. That's against the law.
I noticed your elbows are covered.
A patch, yeah. That's my two-piece outfit, my elbow patch.
Yeah. But you can't show your elbows in
Dalatza. Oh, boy. If anybody says, look at the elbows on him, you'll get your head cut off.
Oh, boy.
But that's not bad. They cut your elbows off. That's the worst. Yeah. But it's the hang-up with dates that come from fig trees. That's a natural patch. pastime, planting figs. The Russians sold us $1 million worth of bad seeds.
Bad fig seeds.
We gave them a whole truckload of aluminum. No figs.
No figs.
The Harlem Globetrotters came in, you know, to do a special for us on Murphmas.
Yeah?
You know, they dribbled around, did a couple back shots, and we gave them some aluminum. They left us some fig seeds.
Yeah?
Those things come up watermelons. But I figured, we use it on Halloween.
Yeah?
We carve them out and make Murph-o-lanterns.
When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. No contest. Religion. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you, and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all-powerful, all-perfect, all-knowing, and all-wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars. They pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit. Thank you very much. But I want you to know something. This is sincere. I want you to know, when it comes to believing in God, I really tried. I really, really tried. I tried to believe that there is a God who created each of us in his own image and likeness, loves us very much, and keeps a close eye on things. War, disease, death, destruction, hunger, filth, poverty, torture, crime, corruption, and the ice capades. Something is definitely wrong. If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed. Results like these do not belong on the resume of a supreme being. This is the kind of shit you'd expect from an office temp with a bad attitude. And just between you and me, in any decently run universe, this guy would have been out on his all-powerful ass a long time ago. And by the way, I say this guy because I firmly believe, looking at these results, that if there is a God, it has to be a man. No woman could or would ever fuck things up like this. So, if there is a God, if there is, I think most reasonable people might agree that he's at least incompetent and maybe, just maybe, doesn't give a shit. Doesn't give a shit, which I admire in a person and which would explain a lot of these bad results. So rather than be just another mindless religious robot, mindlessly and aimlessly and blindly believing that all of this is in the hands of some spooky, incompetent father figure who doesn't give a shit, I decided to look around for something else to worship, something I could really count on. And immediately, I thought of the sun. Happened like that. Overnight, I became a sun worshiper. Several reasons. First of all, I can see the sun. I'm big on that. If I can see something, I don't know, kind of helps the credibility along, you know? So every day I can see the sun as it gives me everything I need. Heat, light, food, flowers in the park, reflections on the lake, an occasional skin cancer, but hey, at least there are no crucifixions and we're not setting people on fire simply because they don't agree with us. Sun worship is fairly simple. There's no mystery, no miracles, no pageantry, no one asks for money, there are no songs to learn, and we don't have a special building where we all gather once a week to compare clothing. And the best thing about the sun, it never tells me I'm unworthy. Doesn't tell me I'm a bad person who needs to be saved, hadn't said an unkind word, treats me fine. So, I worship the sun. But I don't pray to the sun. Know why? I wouldn't presume on our friendship. It's not polite.
Taconite. What is it? And who's asking? Well, you if you're smart. And some 200 million Americans should be asking this question. What is taconite? Well, try to imagine a world without taconite for a minute. Hard to do, isn't it? Hard to imagine a world without transistor radios, chain link fences, ultra-thin TVs, and orgasms. So where does taconite come from? Who better to ask than Sven Foosball, taconite foreman?
It comes from the ground, there.
From the ground and into our homes, taconite has always been the uninvited guest. Let's go back in time to find out why. The year is 1801, in the lush forest not yet known as California, but soon to be called Minnesota. Lewis and Clark have just gone by in their birch canoes. Our pioneer forefathers were there, and taconite was there too, in the ground, waiting. Waiting for the year 1862, a year when everyone in America was worried. Everyone, that is, except Mickey Bitsko, Minnesota farmer. He was plowing the field on March 2nd, 1862, when his plow hit a lump just under the topsoil.
Hey up there, bossy, what the hell there? Oh, big lump or something, I don't know.
Excited by his discovery, Mickey brought it home.
Henrietta, look here, I found it under the topsoil there, big lump or something.
Don't bring that thing in here.
Well, it's big.
It's dirty. It's big and dirty.
Mickey brought the lump into town.
Whoa, up there, bossy.
And strolled with it into the assay office.
Hey. It's a big lump or something.
All right, let me see it.
What is that there?
Why, man, this is taconite!
Oh, my gosh.
Taconite. And it was only 3 months later that three city slickers rolled onto Mickey Bitsko's farm.
Hiya there, want some coffee?
Three men with a smile.
Henrietta, company!
Forged ownership papers.
Yes, sir, that's my name.
And a dream.
Oh, golly, I sold the farm.
A dream of progress. A dream of strip mines.
Oh, golly.
This was a dream to be dreamed by a different kind of pioneer.
Oh, golly.
Tough luck for Mickey Bitsko.
Too bad.
Good luck for Minnesota land invasion.
We go to Las Vegas.
Get you up there, Henrietta.
I go to win a new harness.
And today, in the 20th century, we here at Minnesota Land Invasion still believe in that dream. Let's follow taconite foreman Sven Foosball as he shows us around the plant.
Earl, this is the conveyor belt there, you know, where the taconite lumps come up from the ground.
As the taconite travels on its way, it is heated by tungsten lamps to 600 degrees centigrade.
Up along the corrugated roof there, Earl, you can see the squirrel cages. That's where the squirrels are dying so the people won't have to.
And into the microme vat goes the taconite, where it's converted once again into molten ore. And there it sits, simmering for 3 months.
After 3 months there, the molten ore is poured into that little building there at the end of the warehouse. The boys in the line call that little building the Magic House.
What happens to the taconite in the Magic House, Ben?
Nobody knows for sure. They say inside the Magic House are three virtuous maidens, all clothed in white linen. They touch the taconite with birch wands, turning each lump into common household objects.
That's what they say. What really happens, Ben?
It got me, Earl. Whatever it is in there, I just know I got to oil it every day. You can see things coming out of the Magic House now. Whoops, too many toothbrushes. I got to go bang on the wall.
What happens next, Ben?
Huh? Oh, the boys in shipping take the objects and box them up.
Sven is right. A product is not a product unless it's in a box.
What's this, Sven? I don't know. I think it's a tire.
Too big. This box is too big.
Nobody knows what goes into the Magic House, but what comes out is no secret to the American consumer.
Small.
All boxed up and ready to go.
Into the trucks, boys.
Onto the trucks.
Into the box cars, boys.
Onto the box cars.
Into the homes, boys.
And into our homes.
Here's your record albums and costume jewelry, Mrs. Olson.
God bless you, taconite man.
Yes, God bless taconite. Because happy metal means happy products. And happy products mean happy stockholders here at Minnesota Land Invasion, where you are a problem for us.
Remember on that fateful day. build a fire? How long you been a Boy Scout?
Well, 44 years come next Sunday.
Raymond, put that down. You're too old to play with rabbits. Hey, there's a snake on the other end.
You know, I live in a bad neighborhood. Well, just last week, a guy pulled a knife on me. I could see it wasn't a real professional job. There was butter on it.
Well, I'll tell you, Dean, since I live in this neighborhood, I was attacked only once. Just once, you know? It was a strange thing. The guy who attacked me had class. Yeah, he used an electric razor. Well, actually, I blame myself. I was standing right next to an outlet. Oh, this guy looked me crazy. He was really something. He took my watch, he took my wallet, and he took a little off the sides.
My wife, I got no sex life. The dog keeps watching me in the bedroom wants to learn how to beg. I told him to watch my wife and learn how to roll over and play dead. I tell you, it's tough to stay married to my wife. How do you think I feel? She kissed the dog on the lips and she won't drink from my glass.
Sorry, I was a little late getting here tonight. You know, my dog, he started trouble again. I mean, I got a dog, he tries to run the whole house. Well, the other night, he started trouble. He went over the front door, he started to bark. I went over, I opened the front door. The dog didn't want to go out, he wanted me to leave.
I was talking to my doctor. You know my doctor, Dr. Vinnie Boombach. You know my doctor? Yeah. Well, he told me last week in his office he got 6 cases of VD. I mean, he's all right now, you know.
And my doctor, he don't help either. He told me to run 5 miles a day for 2 weeks. I called him up. I said, Doc, I'm 70 miles from my house.
I'll tell you about trouble. I got the wrong doctor. You know my doctor, Dr. Vinnie Boombach. You know my doctor? What up, doctor? You kidding? What up, doctor? I called him up. I told him I had diarrhea. Put me on hold.
Well, they say when you're driving, you know, watch out for the other guy. I'll tell you, when my wife is driving, you don't have to worry about the other guy. I mean, she'll get him.
Oh, my wife took a driver's test. She was happy. She got 18 out of 20. Yeah, 2 guys jumped out of the way.
I remember things when I was a kid. The time I asked my old man where I came from, he told me I was brought by a crow.
My old man, he didn't help either. The time I asked my old man, how can I get my kite in the air? He told me to run off a cliff.
I'll tell you, when I was a kid, I was ugly, too. I told my old man, he never took me to the zoo. He said, if they want you, they'll come and get you.
Fine. Very possible. Not bad at all.
All right. Nothing like a good glass of Chateau de Chasseler. Eh, Dessart?
Aye, you're right there, Obadiah. Did right. Who'd have thought, 40 years ago, that we'd be sitting here drinking Chateau de Chasseler?
I would have been glad of the price of a cup of tea, then.
Ah, a cup of cold tea.
Aye. Without milk or sugar.
Or tea.
And out of a cracked cup at that.
Yeah. We never had a cup. We used to drink out of a rolled-up newspaper. Best we could manage was to suck on a piece of damp cloth.
But, you know, I often think we were happier then, although we were poor.
Because we were poor.
Aye.
My old dad said to me, he said, money won't bring you happiness, son.
He was right. I was happier then. I had nothing. We used to live in a tiny, tumble-down old house with great holes in the roof. House? You're looking to have a house. We used to live in one room, 26 of us. All there. No furniture. Half the floor was missing, and we were all huddled in one corner for fear of falling. Room? You were lucky to have a room. We used to have to live in corridor.
Corridor? Oh, I used to dream of living in a corridor. That would have been a palace to us. We used to live in a water tank on rubbish tip. Every morning we'd be woke up by having a load of rotting fish dumped on us. House.
Well, when I said house, I mean 'twere only hole in ground covered by a couple of foot of torn canvas. But it were house to us. Oh, well, we were evicted from our hole in the ground. We had to go and live in the lake.
Hey, hey, you were lucky to have a lake. There were over 150 of us living in a small shoebox in the middle of the road.
Car cardboard box.
Right.
Ah, you were lucky. We lived for 3 months in a rolled up newspaper in a septic tank. Ah. Every morning we'd have to get up at 6, clean out rolled up newspaper, eat a crust of stale bread, then we'd have to work 14 hours at mill, day in, day out, for sixpence a week. Ah, and then when we'd come home, Dad would thrash us to sleep with his belt.
Luxury. We used to get up at 3, clean the lake, eat a handful of hot gravel, then we'd work in mill for 20 hours for tuppence a month, then we'd come home and Dad would beat us about the head and neck with a broken bottle. If we were lucky.
Paradise. We had it tough. I used to have to get out at shoebox at midnight, lick road clean, eat a couple of bits of coal gravel, work 23 hours a day at mill for a penny every 4 years, and when we got home, Dad used to slice us in half with a bread knife.
Right. We used to get up in morning at 10:30 at night, half an hour before we'd gone to bed, eat a lump of poison, work 29 hours a day at mill for 8 year lifetime, come home and each night Dad would strangle us and dance about on our graves.
Aye, will you try and tell that to the young people of today? Will they believe you?
No!
Is that you, Roger?
Yes, Father.
A cup of tea in here for you, if you'd like one.
It's very kind of you, sir, but I've just come in from Rugger and I'm a bit grubby. I think I ought to go and have a shower first, sir.
Oh, pour me a cup. There's a good chap, would you?
Certainly, sir. Yes, of course.
Thank you. How was school today?
Oh, much as usual, thank you, sir, but I caught someone having a crafty smoke behind the wooden buildings. Had to give him rather a ticking off. Such a filthy habit, you know, sir.
It's a filthy habit, Roger.
Yes. There we are, sir. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Roger?
Yes, sir? Yes, sir.
Sit down. Roger, your mother and I were having a bit of a chat the other day, and she thought it might be a good idea if I was to have a bit of a chat with you.
A bit of a chat, sir.
A bit of a chat, yes, Roger, just... A bit of a chat.
What about, sir?
Well, there's nothing to be worried about, Roger. It's just that, well, to be perfectly frank, how old are you?
Well, to be perfectly frank, sir, I'm coming up to 18.
Just coming up to 18?
Well, on the verge.
On the verge of 18. Yes, well, I thought it might be a good idea to have a bit of a chat. Now, because I remember from my own experience that it was when I was just, you know, coming up to 18.
On the verge.
On the verge of it. That I first began to take a serious interest in the opposite number. Now, I don't know, Roger, if you know anything about the method whereby you came to be brought about.
Well, sir, some of the boys at school say very filthy things about it, sir.
This is what I was worried about, and this is why I thought I'd have a bit of a chat and explain absolutely, frankly, and openly the method whereby you and everybody in this world came to be. Roger. In order for you to be brought about, it was necessary for your mother and I to do something. In particular, it was necessary for your mother to sit on a chair. To sit on a chair which I had recently vacated and which was still warm from my body. And then something very mysterious, rather wonderful and beautiful happened,
And sure enough, 4 years later, you were born. Now, there's nothing unhealthy about this, Roger. There's nothing unnatural. It's a beautiful thing in the right hands, and there's no need to think less of your mother because of it. She had to do it, she did it, and here you are.
Well, sir, it's very kind of you to tell me. One thing actually slightly alarms me. I was sitting in this very chair yesterday, sir, and I vacated it, and the cat sat on it while it was still warm. And should we have it destroyed?
It's a lovely chair, Roger.
Cat, sir.
Destroy it? No, no, Roger, you don't understand. This thing of which I speak can only happen between two people who are married. And you're not married.
Not yet anyway, sir.
Not to the cat in any case. Well, Roger, now you have this knowledge about chairs and warmth, I hope you'll use it wisely.
Sir.
And take no notice of your school friends or what Uncle Bertie may say.
Dirty Uncle Bertie, they call him.
Dirty Uncle Bertie, and they're right, Roger. Your Uncle Bertie is a dirty, dirty man. He's been living with us now for 40 years, and it does seem a day too much. You know, if it hadn't been for your mother, Roger, I don't know where we'd have been. She's the only person who can really cope with Uncle Bertie. She's the only one who can really deal with him. I don't know if you realize this, Roger, but your mother even has to sleep in the same bed as Uncle Bertie to prevent him getting up to anything in the night. If only there were more people like your mother, Roger.
Well, I'm very pleased that you've told me this, sir, because, as I say, I'm very glad I don't have to believe all those filthy things that the boys at school say. And only yesterday, Uncle Bertie said to me...
Take no notice of Uncle Bertie, Roger. He's a sick, sick man, and we should feel sorry for him.
Well, I'll try, sir. Well, thank you, sir. I wonder if I should take a cup of tea up to Mother while it's still...
I wouldn't do that, Roger. She's upstairs at the moment, coping with Uncle Bertie.
Poor Uncle Bertie.
Poor Uncle Bertie.
One time I saw a farmer and a mule a-plowing over on the mountainside. The farmer, he was a-mumbling and a-grumbling as he plowed those furrows deep and wide. Well, as he went along a-plowing, he was swearing and a-snorting every foot of the way. I overheard his conversation, and this is just about what I heard him say. Says, "Old mule, says you're the son of a jackass, and I'm an image of God. Yet here we work, hitched together, a-tilling and a-toiling the sod. I wonder sometimes if you work for me or do I work for you, Mr. Mule. At times, I think it's a partnership between a mule and a doggone fool. Now, when plowing, we go the same distance, ain't that right? But I work harder than you, 'cause you skim the ground on 4 good legs and I just try to make it on 2. So mathematically speaking, your 4 legs against my 2... I do just twice the work per leg, just twice as much as you. Now, soon we're going to be making the corn crop. Now, that corn's going to be split 3 ways. There'll be a third for you, and a third for me, and a third for the landlord's pay. Now, you take your third and eat it. You're getting the best, and you know it. I have to split my third amongst 8 young'uns, a banker, 6 hens, and a cow. Now, right here, mule, I might mention, you only plow the ground. I shock the corn and husk it while you just standing around all fall and part of the winter. Old mule, you know that it's the truth. I break my back with a cotton sack just to pay the mortgage off on you. The only time I'm your better, though, is when elections come. A man can vote while a mule can't. But that don't worry you none, because you're pretty smart about everything. You know what to worry about. See, you knew politics wasn't going to help you none, and I'm just finding it out. So, mule, just between you and me, you know, would you change places with me? Would you take up all my worries and still contented be? Would you swap places? Now answer me. Of course you know we couldn't. But would you, if you could? Now tell me the truth. You know for a ever-loving fact that you wouldn't.
Okay, good evening, my friends, and welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome once again to the Bit Slap with me, your host, KBC, who is brokenhearted like a lot of you. This has been a really bad week for all kinds of stuff. Just chilling. I didn't know what else to do this week except maybe try to put a bunch of comedy stuff together, make people laugh a little bit if I could. So that's what we did. We started off with a properly religious opening because, you know, that's the way it goes nowadays. And that was, of course, Fireside Theater's Towed Away. Monty Python. I am so worried. And you have good reason to be. I think we all do. But let's just see what happens, all right? Let's just be optimistic, right? Uh-huh. And W.C. Fields, that was the Temperance Lecture. Hudson and Landry, Murph Almighty. Be careful what you wish for. George Carlin, religion is bullshit, as we all know, or most of us know. Let's see, Taconite was Duck's Breath Mystery Theater. I understand the Taconite supply is dwindling, etc., so we're going to have to watch out for that. Larry Verne, after that, the Porcupine Patrol. Larry Verne, a couple of weeks ago I mentioned that there was Shep Woolley that quit everything to assemble movie sets. I was wrong about that. It's actually Larry Verne did that. He did that for like 35 years and retired a happy man, okay? We heard from Rodney Dangerfield, 2 minutes and 17 seconds worth of that. Four Yorkshiremen was the original sketch there. That was John Cleese, Graham Chapman, and Marty Feldman. From the show At Last 1948. So this goes back to the early or to the mid-60s or something. That was the original version of that. And you've heard the others, I'm sure. Dirty Uncle Bertie from Dudley Moore and Peter Cook. And then let's see, Andy Griffith. Conversation with a Mule. And we're going to have to get used to that because that's who we're going to be talking to from now on, or at least for a while. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, I have no feeling that there's anything to be optimistic about, but you never know. Well, history is a strange, crazy bitch, you know? So anyway, speaking of all that, we got more stuff coming. Most of this is comedy. We do have a few tunes scattered in, and it's not really not meant to be funny, but just to help. Help. Anyway, here's a word from one of our sponsors.
You know, Rex?
Yeah, I think that's me.
Well, I've been drinking this popular brand of beer pretty near 100 years.
Yeah?
I'm still so depressed.
Me too. I can't even line dance anymore.
You boys are down in the dumpsters because your adult beverage is only an alcoholic-enhanced dietary supplement.
How come you're so peppy, Roy?
Here, take a swig of what my grandkids put me on, the last Roundup.
I'll try anything.
Polar Pro.
Dang, I do feel a whole lot less suicidal.
And I got the Texas Trots again.
Yee-haw! Polar Pro, a prescription beer for older Americans with natural Alaskan bear urine and Prozac. Consult your doctor if you're pregnant, over 80, and operating heavy equipment. Yee-haw!
The Maple Leaf Megaphone Newsreel marches through customs, into Canada, and right back out again with nothing to declare. Banff, Alberta. And here in Western Canada's unspoiled Rocky Mountain Playground, members of the sinister Canadian Nazi Party meet in their annual rally. The strutting beige shirts gather to stage a book burning of Canadian authors' works, but call off their plans when not enough books can be found to start a fire. Would-be burners of possible books, the sinister Canadian Nazi Party, meeting in Banff, Alberta. Moose Factory. and blood stains the snow in this isolated subarctic community as Royal Canadian Mounties battle Eskimos after being sent to repossess an iron lung. Softened by lush living off the profits of their soap carvings, Moose Factory's Eskimo tribe had gone on an iron lung shopping spree. This tubercular 98-year-old Eskimo woman is dragged from her iron lung and out into the cold where she belongs as husky dogs bark and a finance company representative adds up interest charges. Royal Canadian Mounties doing their duty as always in the blood-stained northern tundra. Ottawa. A moving spectacle unfolds in the Senate of the Canadian Parliament as attendants remove the venerable 104-year-old Senator Cornish Wallaby from the bench where he had sat undetected for the past 35 years. Listed as dead in Senate records, the grand old man of Canadian Parliament was discovered during the current recess by a cleaning lady. All Parliament Hill applauds the 104-year-old Senator Cornish Wallaby on his way to the ambulance. Canada's own Rip Van Winkle found fast asleep in the Senate. Toronto. And 25 of Canada's greatest pro hockey stars arrived to match wits against retarded children in a charity spelling bee. Thousands of eager Torontonians strained to catch a glimpse of their favorite players, and it's Stanley Cup tension as competition gets underway. Our Maple Leaf Megaphone newsreel camera catches the concentration on the faces of the contestants and the disappointment as all 25 of Canada's greatest pro hockey stars lose out in the qualifying rounds. Little Jimmy is a happy mongoloid and a champion speller. Pro hockey stars lose out to retarded children in a charity spelling bee. Truro, Nova Scotia, and Canadian Department of Transport icebreakers prepared to embark on another vital mission to try and find the province of Newfoundland, missing in the fog-shrouded Atlantic wastes for more than 15 years. Previous expeditions have had to turn back empty-handed, but hope runs high that this time, Canada's 10th and newest province will be located at last. Rescue ships setting to sea in search of the missing province of Newfoundland. Kamloops, British Columbia, and the Lord Tweedsmuir Games, featuring North America's third largest indoor checkers tournament, are interrupted by the appearance of a strange furry creature known in legend as the Sasquatch Monster. Our Maple Leaf Megaphone newsreel camera catches a fleeting glimpse of the half-human, half-animal beast as children run and dogs bark hysterically. But order is quickly restored as officials discover that the Sasquatch Monster is only Miss Kamloops for 1974. A happy ending to a moment of panic at the Lord Tweedsmuir Games in Kamloops, British Columbia. The Maple Leaf Megaphone Newsreel marches through customs into Canada and right back out again with nothing to declare.
How'd you like to make extra money in your spare time? For a profitable hobby that can develop into a lucrative business, it's alligators, the small, clean, scaly animals that are literally worth their weight in gold.
Now, they can be raised in a spare room, basement, or garage. It takes only a few minutes a day to care for a pair, and it costs only a few pennies a day to feed each animal. Alligators breed once a year and have 1 to 5 eggs at a time. They wipe clean with a damp cloth.
Now, the pair that you're going to get from Alligator Industries are completely guaranteed producers, all pedigreed and registered. Now, we would like to point out that you can make all sorts of things from these animals. Suitcases, shoes, watch bands, many other expensive articles.
Now, we'll help you get started, folks, and show you how to make substantial profits in alligator raising. We'll supply you with 2 alligator eggs and complete information on the feeding, raising, housing, and breeding of alligators.
Oh, and don't forget, Ray, alligator eggs are sturdy, they're easy to handle, and they're as light as ping pong balls.
Now then, for the free booklet on alligator raising, with no obligation whatsoever, write to Slimy, New York.
And as a special bonus for the first 100 to order alligator eggs, we're going to send absolutely free a one-week supply of vitamin-enriched alligator food.
Remember, no alligator salesman will call at your home.
We'll give you some of the good news first. Triborough Bridge, okay. Harlem River Drive, still good, as is the upper end of the FDR Drive. Up in the Bronx, kind of a snafu start this evening. There was another tie-up going up the elevated Bruckner Expressway about halfway up. It seemed to be in the right lane, so squeeze to your left as you start up in the Triborough. On the Cross Bronx Expressway, tie-up going eastbound, starting away from the GW Bridge in the left-hand lane. After you pass underneath the concourse and continue eastbound, be prepared to merge to the right. But a wrecker was there at 512, so that one may be cleared up. And the Major Deegan northbound, a stalled truck in the right lane. As you go up past the George Washington Bridge ramp, stay to your left as you go up the Major Deegan. And also a tie-up getting to the Bronx River Parkway northbound from the Cross Bronx Expressway. It's tying up a lot of that local street where you have to make that wide sweeping left turn, U-turn, to get to the northbound Bronx River Parkway. There was a truck-car accident there. All right, now, due to the earlier problem on the Cross Bronx, traffic coming off the upper deck of the GW Bridge, as well as the upper end of the West Side Highway, quite slow getting to that Cross Bronx Expressway. All right, a late tie-up going up the West Side Highway. He's in the right lane at about 130th Street. Squeeze over to your left. Lincoln Tunnel still very heavy out of town, but it's good inbound from Jersey. Holland Tunnel also very heavy out of town. No serious delays coming in from the Garden State. We'll have more for you shortly. Now back to Bobbis and Raymond.
And now, the makers of Tingle, the long-wearing dental floss created from spun glass fiber, invite you to join us for another exciting adventure of Elmer W. Litzinger, Spy.
My name is Elmer W. Litzinger, Spy. It's my job to handle the toughest espionage assignments our government can hand out. Recently, we got word that a foreign power might be installing some new missile sites that would endanger our security. To check out the report, I had to be given a phony passport and a whole new identity. With that taken care of, I made my way to the hostile country, posing as a Swedish tourist. The first native I encountered was the clerk at a small hotel where I planned to stay.
Oh, good day, sir. If you're looking for a mirror so you can straighten your blonde wig, there's one across the lobby.
Thank you. But I'll take care of that in my room. I'm a Swedish tourist, and I believe you have a reservation in my name. It's John Smith.
No, I'm sorry, sir. We're not expecting anyone from Sweden named Smith.
Well, there was probably some foul-up in Washington over my arrangements. You see, I haven't been entirely honest with you. I'm really Elmer W. Litzinger, spy.
Oh, yes, Mr. Litzinger. We've been expecting you. Your room is on the top floor. It has a nice large window from which you could fall or be pushed into the air shaft.
Well, I don't really need anything that fancy. I hope it isn't terribly expensive.
Well, the room rate does figure out to around $40 a day in American money, but I don't think you'll be with us for more than a couple of hours, so I'll give you a special price.
Well, that's very kind of you, Mr.
Mirkoff, Lieutenant Colonel Mirkoff.
Really? That's very interesting. Back home, our high-ranking military people don't have to moonlight as hotel clerks to make ends meet.
Well, actually, hotel work is an army assignment here. The top brass likes to keep track of who comes and goes.
And I suppose that's especially true now that you have new missile sites close by?
Well, I wouldn't want to comment on that. But it's interesting that you should think we have any launching locations in this area at all.
Well, we don't suspect you of having finished many of them yet. My guess is two or three, but I could be wrong about that figure.
Yes, you certainly could be. Now, if you'd care to freshen up, I'll have one of our sadistic brutes from the secret police take your bags up to your room for you.
Well, I'm really not supposed to let anyone else touch them. They contain quite a few secret documents.
Oh, you don't need to worry about that. We've already photographed everything you brought along out at the airport, so we won't be needing your original copies anymore.
Oh, well, fine. That's a load off my mind. Incidentally, I wonder if the colleague I was supposed to meet here has checked in yet. He's a Swiss merchant named William Jones.
Well, he was here, but he's left. In fact, we're giving you the room he occupied for a few minutes.
Seems strange that he'd check out before I got here. Did he leave a forwarding address?
No, but I believe he mentioned something about going to the bottom of the air shaft.
I see. Well, if he's taken off on a side trip, that must mean he's accomplished what we were sent here to do. So I'll just file my report with the Home Office, saying, mission completed and accomplished, by Elma W. Litzinger, spy.
Friends, I know you're as anxious as we are to keep this fine program coming into your home, so why not show your appreciation to our generous sponsor by rushing out now to buy a large supply of Tingle, the miracle dental floss made of spun glass fiber. Get some quickly, and be sure to join us soon for more fabulous adventure in the career of Elmer W. Litzinger, spy.
Time to play Mystery Noise. Our lines are open, and our resident expert, Dr. Audio, will assist us when our listening audience fails to guess the mystery noise. And now, for our first mystery noise. The phone lines are open. Can anyone tell us what the mystery noise is? Dr. Audio, what did you think of our noise?
Well, it was a very subtle, very complicated noise. Since no one else seems to know, do you mind if I analyze it?
No, go right ahead.
It seems to me that the mystery noise was a combination of several polished surfaces of either a metal or ceramic alloy, or perhaps both, sliding ever so gently out of a felt sheet, or perhaps across a medium-weight cotton bunting, or perhaps it was a potato rubbing against corduroy.
Looks like we have a caller. Hello, can you identify the mystery noise?
Of course you cannot.
Wasn't that a saw?
Yes, it was. Good work.
Do I win an album?
You win 2 tickets to the circus, Circus.
Great.
Give the man the tickets. It was too simple, too crude a noise for my taste. I hate the circus. I never cared for it much. I'd rather sit at home and listen to the noises. Oh, do you hear that? That was the bells of Capistrano, I think.
No, that's the phone.
Oh.
When are you going to play some music again?
Richard Nixon to be our president, and Cabot Lodge will make a great VP. Go vote for Richard Nixon and Henry Cabot Lodge, and we'll have peace and sound prosperity. With Nixon in the White House and Lodge's trusted mate, we know that everyone could feel secure. They've proved they have the know-how to guide our ship of state through fair and stormy weather, that's for sure. Come on, you independents and every GOP, we've got a job to do election day. Go vote for Richard Nixon and Henry Cabot Lodge, 'cause they're the ones to lead the USA. In the White House and Lodge's trusted mate, we know that everyone could feel secure. They've proved they have the know-how to guide our ship of state through fair and stormy weather, that's for sure. Come on, you independents and every GOP, we've got a job to do election day. Go vote for Richard Nixon and Henry Cabot Lodge, 'cause they're the ones to lead the USA. Hooray for peace, prosperity for USA.
One day a big north wind from the lonely Arctic sea married a southern breeze from the lovely Caribbean, and when their child was born, he was big and loud and mean, so they decided to call him Hurricane. He had a great big eye in the center of his head, and when he looked at you, he would fill your heart with dread, for he would blow everything that lay ahead. He was a devil, that ugly Hurricane. In time he grew, till he darkened all the sky, and then it was he knew, finally the time to try to blow the whole wide world over as it floated by. He was a mean one, that evil Hurricane. And so he puffed and blew, and he threw his wind about, while his great eye glared through the thunder of his shouts. But all he did was blow, till he blew completely out. He blew his topper, that wicked hurricane. One day a big north wind from the lonely Arctic scene married a southern breeze from the lovely Caribbean, and when their child was born, he was big and loud and mean, and they decided to call him Hurricane. He had a great big eye in the center of his head, and when he looked at you, he would fill your heart with dread, for he would blow, blow, blow everything that lay ahead. He was a devil, that ugly Hurricane. In time he grew, 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 till he darkened all the sky, and then it was he knew, finally the time to try to blow the whole wide world over as it floated by. He was a mean one, that evil Hurricane. And so he puffed and blew, and he threw his wind about, while his great eye glared through the thunder of his shouts. But all he did was blow, till he blew completely out. He blew his topper, that wicked Hurricane. He blew his topper, that wicked Hurricane.
Bucky Harris gave me a job as coach. You must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Which they give these ball players very peculiar names, like
Goofy.
Well, let's see. We have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second. I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
And you know the fellow's name?
Oh, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who is on first?
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes.
I mean, what's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on
who's
second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Oh, he's on third. We're not talking about him. Now, let's see.
You got outfield?
Sure.
Now, fielder's name.
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field.
You got a pitcher on the team.
Tomorrow?
What time tomorrow? You're going to tell me who's pitching.
Now listen, who is not pitching?
I'm going to throw the guy out of first base, so I throw it to who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
You throw it to who?
Whoever it is picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to? I don't know. I don't know. Throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
I'm an idiot.
Oh, boy. How you doing, Alan?
Yeah, it's kind of rough, man. Kind of rough. Yeah. I'm telling you.
I tell you, it's getting late. But yeah. I really like getting down, you know? I mean, I like getting down late.
It's out of sight, man.
Yeah.
But I'd like to hit the sack late as it is.
You're not feeling good, huh?
Rotten, man. Rotten. I'm so down today, Albert.
You're down, huh? Oh, what a pity.
Oh, I don't know what to do.
Hey, maybe I can help, Albert. I've got this great joke about these three scientists, an Englishman, a German, and a Jew. Big, big yucks here. It's a real pick-me-up.
I don't want to hear no jokes.
You don't want to hear any jokes, huh?
It might distort my point of view.
No, it's not that kind of a joke. Now look, there were these three scientists, and they were all working on this top-secret radiation project. Real hush-hush stuff. Shh.
Please don't make me laugh, Albert. Because my career's based on feeling blue.
Okay, Albert. Now, this doctor comes to these three scientists one day and he says, "Gentlemen, I've got some bad news for you."
Speaking of doctors.
Yeah.
You know, I saw one yesterday and he said, "I'm going to die."
Well, that's what this joke's all about. How three different kinds of people react to bad news from a doctor. Now, in this case, the scientists have been exposed to too much radiation.
Oh, he says, ain't nothing gonna save me this time.
I mean, radiation can kill you. It's like eating a TV set.
You know, it ain't even worth a try.
Well, you know, that is quite a coincidence, because that is exactly what this doctor told our three scientist friends. Hey, maybe you all go to the same doctor, huh? No, I'm just kidding. I know you don't.
You ain't taking this serious enough, Albert.
Well, maybe you're right, Albert. Here, I'll try and shape up. There we go. How's that?
But frankly, neither am I.
You're not? Fine.
Now, back to the joke. The doctor said to these three scientists, gentlemen, since you worked so hard on this project, you can have one last wish, anything you want, on us. All right, you know what the Englishman said? I love this.
I don't care about no Englishman.
He doesn't care about any Englishman. Would you listen to this blues great?
I got enough problems right here.
Al, stop being such a gloomy Gus. Now, the Englishman said, all right, if I have one last wish, send me home so I may spend my last days looking over the white cliffs of Dover. Great, huh?
No, I can't see no white cliffs, Albert.
Well, but you don't really have to see them, Albert. I mean, it's just scene setting. It's just exteriors. I mean, it's
not... But these days, I ain't seeing nothing too clear.
You want my advice? Contact lenses. Okay, now the doctor asked the German scientist what his last wish was, and he said, Ben, I'd like to spend the last days in the great beer halls of Munich getting drunk and listening to music.
I would say getting drunk and digging music sounds like a mighty, 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 mighty good idea.
Well, that's better. Now we're beginning to see some smiles. Okay, so the Jewish scientist was the only one left, and the doctor asked him what his last wish was. Okay?
I can feel the punchline coming. Oh, I can feel it. I can feel it coming soon.
All right, now remember now, the doctor said that each of these scientists had only one wish because they were going to die. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, but it's very important, the joke. If you don't know it, you might not understand
it. Yes! Tell me what the Jewish fella said.
Okay, the Jewish fella said, Val, to tell you the truth, if I got one
you
last
wish... You know, I'm about to end this too.
Excuse me. The Jewish fella said, Val, to tell you the truth, if I got one last wish, I wish to see another doctor. You heard it. You don't like it?
No,
it's not fun.
No, it's... It's real funny, Albert.
Well, you know, I would like to point out that it didn't get any laughs because there's no audience here, and if there was an audience, it would get
I
big laughs.
I know you're a mighty funky buffoon.
Hey, I thank you for the
compliment. Yes, you're welcome, man.
What a gas jamming with you.
Been a pleasure, man. I'm telling you, you're out of sight. I'm telling you, that's cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Great. Hey, come out west sometime, huh?
I'll have to do that.
Oh, I'll take you to the best delicatessen you've ever seen.
Yeah, California. But you know, I'm crazy about the McDonald's hamburger.
Good evening. On Ethel the Frog tonight, we look at violence, the violence of British gangland. Last Tuesday, a reign of terror was ended when the notorious Piranha brothers, Doug and Dinsdale, after one of the most extraordinary trials in British legal history, were sentenced to 400 years imprisonment for crimes of violence. Tonight, Ethel the Frog examines the rise to power of the Piranhas and their subsequent tracking and capture by the brilliant Superintendent Harry Snapper Organs of Q Division.
Doug and Dinsdale Piranha were born on probation in Kipling Road, Southwark. Their father, Arthur Piranha, a scrap metal dealer and TV quizmaster, was well known to the police and a devout Catholic. In January 1928, he had married Kitty Malone, an up-and-coming East End boxer. Doug was born in February 1929 and Dinsdale 2 weeks later, and again a week after that. Their next-door neighbour, Mrs. Lamberta Simnel.
Kipling Road was a typical East End street. People were in and out of each other's houses with each other's property all day long. Yes, they were a cheery lot. Cheery and violent. I remember Doug was keen on boxing, but when he learned to walk, he took up putting the boot in the groin.
When the Piranhas left school, they were called up, but were found by an army board to be too mentally unstable, even for national service. Denied the opportunity to use their talents in the service of their country, they began to operate what they called the operation. They would select a victim and then threaten to beat him up if he paid them the so-called protection money. 4 months later, they started another operation, which they called the Other Operation. In this racket, they selected another victim and threatened not to beat him up if he didn't pay them. 1 month later, they hit upon the Other Operation. In this, the victim was threatened that if he didn't pay them, they would beat him up. This, for the Piranha Brothers, was the turning point.
Superintendent Harry Snapper Organs of Q Division takes up the story.
Doug and Dinsdale Piranha now formed a gang, which they called The Gang, and used terror to take over nightclubs, billiard halls, gaming casinos and racetracks. When they tried to take over the MCC, they were, for the only time in their lives, slit up a treat. As their empire spread, however, we in Q Division were keeping tabs on their every movement by reading the colour supplements.
One small-time operator who fell foul of Dinsdale Piranha was Vince Snetterton Lewis.
Well, one day I was at home threatening the kids, when I looks out through the hole in the wall,
and I sees this tank pull up, and out gets one of Dinsdale's boys. So he chains me to the back of the tank and takes me for a scrape round to Dinsdale's place. And Dinsdale's there, in the conversation pit, with Doug and Charles Paisley, the baby crusher, and two film producers, and a man they called Kierkegaard, who just sat there biting the heads off whippets. And Dinsdale just says, "Oh, you've been a naughty boy, Clement." And he splits me nostrils open, and saws me leg off, and pulls me liver out. And I tell him my name's not Clement. And then he loses his temper and nails my head to the floor.
He nailed your head to the floor?
At first, yeah.
Another man who had his head nailed to the floor was Stig O'Tracy.
Stig, I've been told Dinsdale Piranha nailed your head to the floor.
No, never! He was a smashing bloke. He used to buy his mother flowers and that. He was like a brother to me.
But the police have film of Dinsdale actually nailing your head to the floor.
Oh, yeah, he did that.
Why?
Well, I had to. I had transgressed the unwritten law.
What had you done?
Well, he didn't tell me that. But he gave me his word that it was the case, and that's good enough for me with old Dinsy. I mean, he didn't want to nail my head to the floor. I had to insist. He wanted to let me off.
I understand he also nailed your wife's head to a coffee table.
Yeah, he did that. He was a cruel man, but fair.
Clearly, Dinsdale inspired tremendous fear among his business associates. But what was he really like?
I walked out with Dinsdale on many occasions, and I found him a charming and erudite companion. He was wont to introduce one to eminent celebrities, celebrated American singers, members of the aristocracy, and other gang leaders.
How had he met them?
Through his wonderful work for charity. He took a warm interest in boys' clubs, sailors' homes, choristers' associations, and the Grenadier Guards.
Was there anything unusual about him?
I should bleeding well say not, except that Dinsdale was convinced that he was being watched by a giant hedgehog, whom he referred to as Spanish Norman.
How big was Norman supposed to be?
Normally, he was wont to be about 12 feet from his head to his anus. And when he was about, Dinsdale would go very quiet and start wobbling, and his nose would swell up, and his teeth would move about, and he'd get very violent, and claim that he laid Stanley Baldwin.
Did it worry you that he, for example, stitched people's legs together?
Well, it's better than bottling it up, isn't it? He was a gentleman, Dinsdale. And what's more, he knew how to treat a female impersonator.
Most of these strange tales concern Dinsdale. But what of Doug? One man who met him was Luigi Vercotti.
I'd been running a successful escort agency. High class, no, really, high class girls. Didn't have any of that. That was right out. Hello? Not now. Stum. Yeah, we'll have the watch ready for you at midnight. The watch. The Chinese watch. Right, bye-bye, mother. So I decided to open an high-class nightclub for the gentry at Biggleswade with international cuisine and cooking and top-line acts and not a cheap clip joint for picking up tarts. That was right out. I deny that completely. Shut that door! And one evening, in walks Dinsdale with a couple of big lads, one of whom was carrying a tactical nuclear missile. They said I'd bought one of their fruit machines and would I pay for it.
How much did they ask?
£750,000.
And why didn't you go to the police?
Well, I noticed that the lad with the thermonuclear device was the chief constable for the area. So a week later they called again, told me the check had bounced and said I have to see Doug.
Doug.
Well, I was terrified. Everyone was terrified of Doug. I seen grown men pull their own heads off rather than see Doug. Even Dinsdale was frightened of Doug.
What did Doug do?
He used sarcasm. He knew all the tricks. Dramatic irony, metaphor, bathos, puns, parody, hyperbole, litotes and satire. He was vicious. Shut that bleeding door! Mother.
In this way, by a combination of violence and sarcasm, the Piranha Brothers by February 1966 controlled London and the southeast of England. It was in February, though, that Dinsdale made a big mistake. In a fit of pique, he napalmed Cheltenham. Even the police began to sit up and take notice.
The Piranhas realised they'd gone too far and that the hunt was on. They went into hiding. I decided on a subtle approach, viz. Some form of disguise, as the old helmet and boots were a bit of a giveaway. Luckily, my years with Bristol Rep stood me in good stead, as I assumed a bewildering variety of disguises. I tracked them to Cardiff, posing as the Reverend Smiler Egret. Hearing they'd gone back to London, I assumed the identity of a pork butcher, Brian Stoats. On my arrival in London, I discovered they had returned to Cardiff. I followed as Gloucester from King Lear. Acting on an hunch, I spent several months in Buenos Aires as Blind Pew, returning through the Panama Canal as Ratty in Toad of Toad Hall. Back in Cardiff, I relived my triumph as Sancho Panza in Man of La Mancha, which the Bristol Evening Post described as a glittering performance of rare perception, although the Bath Chronicle was less than enthusiastic. In fact, it gave me a right penning, quote.
As for the performance of Superintendent Harry Snapper Organs as Sancho Panza, the audience were bemused by his high-pitched Welsh accent, his abusive ad-libs, and his persistent unscheduled appearances and cries of what's all this then during the rape scene.
The police now began to close the net around the Piranha Brothers, and it was in a last desperate attempt to forestall the inevitable that Doug and Dinsdale went to a small house in Stepney, where they...
Excuse me?
Yes?
I got a message from Dinsdale. He likes this record very much, but him and some of the boys have the feeling that this last item has gone on a bit too long.
Well, I'm afraid I disagree. I think a story like this needs time to
develop. You misunderstand me. He don't want to debate about it. Dinsdale thinks that the humorous impact will be somewhat dissipated by the prolongation of this item.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not prepared...
Oh, sorry, Squire. I'll scratch the record. 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 Sorry, Squire. I'll scratch the record.
Barnaby Joyce, thank you for your time.
It's very good to be with you, Brian. Good evening.
An inconclusive election. What are the lessons that come out of this?
Well, I think, Brian, pretty obviously we need to listen a great deal more.
Who do you need to listen to?
I beg your pardon?
Are you negotiating with the independents?
Yes, Brian, we currently do little else.
And how's that going?
Ah, well, you know, it could be... I mean, it's bloody hope. It's...
You have your good days and your bad days.
What a good way to look at it, Brian. Yeah, we'll have a good day if I just wait long enough.
Barnaby Joyce, what went wrong, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of people are just pretty grumpy, Brian. I mean, if the gate's open and the weather's bad, blame the government. The internet doesn't work, blame the government.
Well, hang on a second. Whose fault is it if the internet doesn't work, really?
Yeah, bad example, Brian. But let's say, the budget's a shocker and kids can't buy houses and the health and education are going...
But whose fault is this really?
Well, Brian, you're missing the point a wee bit. My point is that a lot of people are unaware of what you can do in government and what you can't do.
Yeah, and I suppose the difficulty for you here is you're leading the junior party in a coalition government.
Yeah, tell me about it, Brian. I've just spent a fortnight dodging fruit.
Tell me, how does the coalition work in practice?
Well, as I keep saying to people, Brian, the coalition is simply a natural alliance of two groups... in the political framework, who have a great deal in common.
But why aren't they one political group?
Well, they are one group. That's what I'm saying to you.
So why are there two groups?
There aren't two groups. It's two parties, Brian, within the one group.
But how does this work in practice? I mean, let's say you're the Deputy Prime Minister. Yep. You're the leader of the National Party. Yep. You want to increase diesel rebate.
Yeah, very good
what
example.
What do you do?
In that case, Brian, I would go in and I would speak to Malcolm in this case, Brian, and I would say, Malcolm, we want to increase the diesel rebate.
And then what happens?
Then I would explain to Malcolm what diesel is.
And what does he say?
He would say, how nice to see you, Barnaby. We must do this more often. Thanks for your useful suggestion. I'll have a talk with my friends.
And
then of course,
happens?
He goes away and he speaks to all these plonkers from Wallara and that guy, Scott Harrison or whatever.
Scott Morrison, I think.
Him, yeah. And they would ever think about it.
And then what?
Well, that's as far as we've ever got, Brian. We've never got further than
that. I mean, this puts you in a difficult position, doesn't
it? Tell me about it, Brian. It puts me in a terribly difficult position, yeah.
How do you get on with Bob Catter, by the way?
Oh, Bob's a good bloke. I've known Bob for a very long... I wouldn't have any... Oops, excuse me. Oh, this will be him.
Oh.
G'day, Bob. Yeah, how are they hanging? Yeah, good. Yeah, what are you doing Saturday? You want to run a country? Oh, don't worry about him. I'll talk to him. No, leave him to me. I'll talk to him. Well, old buddy, explain what diesel is. Leave him to me.
And we all know that protocol... takes precedence over procedure. This parliamentary point of order, based on the state of inertia developing a centrifugal force, which is used as a catalyst rather than a catalytic agent, which hastens a chain reaction and remains the same in a condition prior to its inception. This pivot or focal point, which is used as a tangent in that symphony of thought in the development of ideas based on the ideology that the confrontation is soon proposed when we look to that arrived in my hypothetical alternative rather than to accept the dullness of dreary reality so that we can ultimately give vent to our spleen so that the bile is secreted through the pancreas. This, however, does not negate the necessity where we must be cognizant of the arid areas and regions beyond our control and set upon that oasis. Look to our party's platform, rest on our record, and feel secure with the knowledge that salvation is its own reward. Yeah. Now, many of you people say, What the hell is he talking about? I'm only repeating the solution that Bush has given us to solve his situation, which is comprehensive and therefore didactable to the characteristics of the character, making it almost impossible for them. What was the question?
Give me immortality or give me death. That's the motto here at Ralph's Ball Sports, new and used body shop in the city of the future. Hi, friends. Ralph's Ball Sports here to tell you that everybody must die, but you don't have to be there when it happens. That's why we're having a great going on a body sale. Yes, you can live forever while your friends fall apart around you like rotten fruit. And here's how. Lease an organ or limb from our headless body farm. It's made in America from Americans. Enter the new century with these exclusive clone-ons. Nap velour designer jeans. Deluxe follicle hair mat grafting with upgraded media-sensitive stimulated wrapper filler. Rear roll, non-glossy carbon intensified glue guards, power moons, and tinted tint grill spoilers in slash dash or faux flannel. So come on down to Ralph's Ball Sports, City of the Future, and do it today because there may not be a tomorrow.
You say the last elections didn't turn out like you planned. You're feeling blue and clueless, you just don't understand. You're sad and sulky, somber, sullen, moping and morose. You're woeful, doleful, weak and weary, semi-comatose. You stare at your computer screen, devoid of joy and hope. You're so depressed you can't get dressed, you're noosing up a rope. But just remind yourself when you can't stand it anymore that we've been through some crappy times before. We've been through some crappy times before. Slavery, unbridled knavery, and the Civil War. Don't stop caring, stop despairing, get up off the floor. 'Cause we've been through some crappy times before. Intolerable intolerance has swept across the land. The gospel-thumping homophobes have got the upper hand. They're peeping through the windows and they're creeping through the door. But we've been through some crappy times before. We've been through some crappy times before. McCarthyism, prohibition, and the world wars. We're up the creek, the boat is leaking, still we'll reach the shore. 'Cause we've been through some crappy times before. Though we hear reassurances that everything is fine, it's been a while since we've heard a canary in this mine. Just when you think it's really bad, it gets a little worse. But keep on looking forward, though we're going in reverse. You shout out that the emperor's not wearing any clothes. He lies so much that you could hang your laundry from his nose. Fox is in the hen house and the wolf is at the door. But we've been through some crappy times before. We've been through some crappy times before. Indiscretions, floods, depressions, Vietnam and more. The sun has set, but don't forget another day's in store. 'Cause we've been through some crappy times before. 'Cause we've been through some crappy times before. Yes, we've been through some crappy times.
And oh boy. boy, ain't that the truth. I think we've been, I can't think of when we've been in actually worse times than this. 9/11 comes to mind, when Kennedy was shot. There's been other things that have gone on that people don't talk about that I won't talk about here because, you know, all that stuff. Anyway, forget about all that. We start out with the National Lampoon. The Maple Leaf Megaphone Newsreel from the National Lampoon Radio Hour. We heard from Bob and Rang, Alligator Industries, a word from them, and Elmer W. Litzinger, spy. And I thought I'd throw in a traffic report in the middle of that, just for fun. Gotcha. Let's see, we heard the phone-in from Duck's Breath, little phone-in thing there with the mystery noise. Clancy Hayes, Dixieland Band, Go Vote Nixon Lodge. Ah, the good old days. Never mind. Anyway, Evil Hurricane was Nervous Norvis. Remember Hurricane Donald in July of 2017? Didn't make much news, so, yeah, well. He was president at the time, too, yeah. Anyway, Quick Who's on First from Chris Combs there, part of the 60-second remix challenge of years ago. Don't Make Me Laugh Blues was the Alberts, Albert King and Albert Brooks. We heard from Monty Python and the Piranha Brothers, one of my favorite bits of theirs, and I thought it would bring a smile to somebody's face. Who knows? Clark and Daw, they're from Australia, you know, and that was The Government You Ordered Has Been Delayed. It should be here next Tuesday. Okay, they knew more about that than we did, and this was like 10 years ago, all right? Professor Irwin Corey straightening it out for you, and I hope that puts it all in a box for you and sends it out to Cleveland. Out of Body Sale was, of course, Ralph Spoilsport, and we've been through some crappy times before, have we now? That was the Austin Lounge Lizards, okay? Okay, let's all take a deep breath because we got to put our heads down and get back into this again and start fighting again. I thought we could maybe stop fighting for a while, eh? Anyway, a couple more coming for you. Give you something to think about. I'll be back next week, hopefully in a better mood, and hopefully, I don't know, hopefully something good will happen. Oh, wait, no, something good did happen. I got to admit, I paid off my car today. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And on that note...
There's a feeling comes a ceiling, and it sets my brain a-reeling when I'm listening to the music of a military band. Any tune like Yankee Doodle simply sets me off my noodle. It's that patriotic something that no one can understand. Way down south in the land of cotton, melody untiring, ain't that inspiring? Hurrah, hurrah, we'll join the Jubilee, and that's going some for the Yankees by gum. Red, white, and blue, I am for you. Honest, you're a grand old rag. You're a grand old rag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old rag. I'm no cranky hanky panky, I'm a dead square honest Yankee, and I'm mighty proud of that old flag that flies for Uncle Sam. Oh, I don't believe in raving, every time I see it waving, there's a chill runs up my back that makes me glad I'm what I am. Here's a land with a million soldiers, that if we could need them, we'll fight for freedom. Hurrah, hurrah, for every Yankee tar, and old G.A.R., every stripe, every star, red, white, and blue, that's all to you, honest, you're a grand old rag. You're a grand old rag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag. What should old acquaintance be forgotten? Keep your eye on the grand old rag.
Never change just as long as you live. Oh, I used to love you, but it's all over. Yes, yes, all over now.
Get thee behind me, Satan.
Sometimes,
sometimes I can't keep from crying sometimes. Oh, mama, she's dead and gone, and I'm all alone. I can't keep from crying sometimes, sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes